I'm Jordan. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, man. Thank you so much. That was really sweet. I have dogs here, just so y'all know, and someone mowing the lawn conveniently at this time. And so there might be some noise, and I freeze sometimes. My Wi-Fi goes in and out, so just bear with me. I'm really grateful to be here with you guys. So my sobriety date is May 16th, 2015. This is my second go around of getting sober. And let me start this timer. God, I'm so passionate about this stuff now, in a way that I never thought I would be, but this program and the people in it saved my life, and taught me how to live in a way that I never thought I could experience. I never thought I'd be on this side telling you guys about my story, or that, that I'm not drinking and drugging and that I have a life worth living. That was never my, anticipation. Like, I never thought that that would be a real thing. And so, I want to keep my drinking short. I'll share with you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, all I have to share with you is my experience, strength, and hope, and, God will do the rest. I've prayed all day today that God speak through me, and, you know, whatever you guys get out of it, that's your business. And I'm really excited to be here. So, basically I grew up with parents who were sober, but relapsing as well. I am a child. My story is not unique in any way, shape, or form. I have parents of divorce. I've had three dads, who helped raise me. And, you know, my mom was in and out of the program trying to stay sober. I was that little kid crawling on the floors of AA, passing out chips, blowing out candles on the cake. And so the people in the AA community really helped raise me. And, you know, I guess growing up, like, my parents kind of told me about drinking and what drugs would do. I had family members pass away, or die from drug overdoses. Everybody in my family that I can think of is either a drug addict or an alcoholic. Some of them are in jail. Some of them have been to prison. And, you know, I just grew up in an atmosphere with a lot of love, but a lot of dysfunction. And, from a very young age, I felt out of place in a lot of ways. And, my first drug was attention and boys. And, I share that because that was like, I didn't recognize it at the time, but just a big indicator for me that I was, something was different. It just felt different. I felt like a lot of people had, this manual to life that I didn't, and that I was unique in a lot of the ways that I felt, that my brain, like the thoughts that I thought were crazy. And so, I started drinking at a pretty young age, just testing the waters. And at 13, the first time I really drank, I blacked out. And I was like, let's do this again. From a very young age, I liked to do bad shit. And that's just, I like chaos. I like drama. And I didn't think that at the time. But I really wanted to escape in a big way. And my life felt very painful. It felt very heavy. And the thoughts that I had were all consuming. My feelings ran my life, you know, and I was a slave to my emotional, my emotions. And so, eventually, you know, I got to a place where I was drinking, blacking out, sneaking out, doing all the things in high school. I wanted to be good. I was living a double life. I wanted to be good. I wanted to, I was a dancer growing up, you know, I had to make good grades. I had to do all this stuff. And then I'm sneaking out at night. I'm drinking. I'm with certain people I wasn't supposed to be with. And, you know, I'm living that double life that it talks about in the book. I want to, you know, experience this life and all these achievements and love and like all these things, but I know in my heart I don't deserve it. And, I wanted to be good, but there was something in me, you know, my old sponsor would always say, I can never do the next right thing if doing the wrong thing gets me what I want. And that's how I lived my life. And, I continued to do these things. And even when I was younger, I was baffled. I was like, I said I would never do something like that. And then I did. And, you know, I was on like dance team and like this stuff. And then, showing up in certain ways there. And I just had all these stage characters, and then I'm drinking a 40 of OE in a ditch, smoking Black and Milds with my friends, you know? And that's just like the contradiction, you know? And I was just always a tornado in a lot of people's lives, even at a very young age. And my parents are freaking out, you know, trying everything that they can. But I'm lying, denying, justifying. That's like already a thing. And, you know, my parents are talking about sending me to boarding school or sending me off somewhere because they don't know how to deal with me. And, you know, there was a lot of physical abuse, already in relationships, mental abuse, emotional abuse, and, you know, my romantic relationships from a very young age. And so finally at 18, I was like, as like a preventative measure, I was like, you know what? I think that, I need to get sober. I think that I need to stop drinking because I know where this goes. And, I don't want to go down that road. And I'd already messed up so much stuff. And, you know, I let the dance career go. I let the college stuff go. I was like, I'm not doing that. And so I got sober and I stayed for about 2.5 years and I did some things. I surrendered a little bit because I wasn't really ready. And I said, okay, I'm just gonna follow these things. But I really didn't understand what alcoholism was. And that was a huge part of my story the first time, was like, I didn't understand what it looked like in my life. And I didn't understand what alcoholism is up against Jordan, like my DNA. I didn't understand what it was to sacrifice my soul to save my mind on a regular basis. And that when I operate my will and continue to be dishonest with myself and block myself from my higher power, that I will drink and I will continue to live a life that feels like I'm existing, that, you know, I will drink again. And so that's what I started to do. I started to go and do these things. You know, I got into a relationship, when I was kind of, I was dry. And a lot of my, I'm 20 at the time. And a lot of the people I knew, you know, I was going to meetings. I was pretty much living off the fellowship. And something I didn't recognize either is I was doing a lot of the things that these other girls were doing, and not being honest with myself that I can't do stuff like that. And so, you know, I'm going out to bars and I'm like living it up and just acting like I don't have a drinking problem. And I start to live that double life again. I'm being dishonest about my relationship. I have an abortion in sobriety and I don't tell anybody. I don't tell my sponsor. And you know, I did some things that were really heavy and I just wanted to hide. And I thought since I had some quote unquote time, I had like 2 years that I couldn't tell anybody. And so, you know, people started to trickle out and go out and relapse. And so I'm sitting at a bar, or I was at like a strip club. Why I'm at a strip club in sobriety, I mean, for me that, you know, I don't know, but that, you know, that's the life I was living. And someone offered me a shot. And it was like all the things that all the pain and all the things that I had experienced before didn't come into my mind at that time to block me from taking that drink. And within 2 seconds, 2.5 years was out the window and I was drinking again and I was off to the races. And at first it looked like manageable. Like these people don't know what alcoholism is. They have no idea. They're just having fun doing their thing. And I'm over here like, you know, I'm in a relationship where he doesn't understand that you don't want to see me drink. You don't want to know who that Jordan is, you know? And so, you know, I start drinking again and immediately become a tornado. A lot of the things I said I would never do, I started to do. That relationship ended, of course. And, you know, I just go on the same spree. And that darkness comes over me. And, you know, I'm stealing from people I said I would never steal from. You know, and I'm just going deeper and deeper. My health, my physical health, I mean, all of it, you know, I'm throwing up every day. I'm drinking to the point, you know, they have to shave my teeth down, my esophagus, like all that stuff that, you know, I said I would never experience. I start to experience. I'm going to the hospital and I'm like, I want you to put an IV of whatever in me, and then I'm out that night drinking because I'm so dehydrated, you know, and I go and the emergency room bills and all the things, right? But none of that, all of our stories look different. And that's the thing is, like, when I came in AA, I was like, I'm not bad enough, or it doesn't look, you know, like, I guess my idea was I'm going to eventually get to a place where I get in so much pain that I'll use every drug I ever wanted. And if I don't die, that then I'll get sober. And that was like my idea. And so something happened. I got in another knockdown drag out with some guy I was dating at the time. And I came home to my parents, and for some reason, for the first time in a long time, so I stayed out for 5 years. My relapse lasted for almost 5 years, and that was not my plan. I thought I could just come back whenever I needed to or wanted to, and that's not real. I got swept up by that shit, and I was gone. And so then, you know, they asked me, they said, we know you have a problem with relationships, romantic relationships, that's clear. Do you think you have a problem with anything else? And I was like, no, I don't. And then the next day I woke up and it was all over me and I couldn't hold it anymore. And there was this weight, and I pulled my mom aside and I was sobbing and I was like, I need help. I'm an alcoholic. I know I've lied to you about it. And I know, you know, I've hid a lot of things from you. I was like, but things are not well right now. I am messing up my life. And, you know, she didn't know all the details. My alcoholic life seemed the only normal one. So I barely knew all the details when I got sober. When I got sober, then I started to look at my life, and I was like, oh my God, like, I'm out in the middle of the street, like, telling people I'm going to kill myself and that I'm going to get, you know, my mom's calling the police, just completely insane, right? Like, things that, and I wasn't even drunk at the time. Like, those are things that I would do. You know, I'd hold people emotionally hostage, and really try to get what I wanted out of life, no matter what. And so, you know, my mom was like, do you need to go to, immediately when she asked me, right after I say, I need help, she goes, do you need to go to treatment? And I was like, F no, nope, I'm not, fuck no, I'm not going to treatment. You know, I'm not going to, I don't need your help. I know I said I need help, but you don't know how to help me. And then she goes, well, if you're not going to go to treatment, then I'm going to follow you to Austin. And I'm grateful she didn't let up on that, because I had a very small window of opportunity. And she followed me to Austin, and I detoxed going to meetings, 1030 Westlake. And, you know, I don't recommend that. Detoxing in meetings is not fun, and it's very dangerous. But you know, I'm also smoking weed and dabs and doing all these other things. But mostly alcohol is my main drug. And when I couldn't drink it, I would try to find something else, because I, you know, it was making me sick or whatever. But anyway, you know, I walk in, I get a desire chip, I do all the things, and 4 days in, I'm like, I need a sponsor, 'cause I know this already. I need a sponsor. I get a sponsor. And I had an experience with that sponsor that was, I always say this in my story now because I think it's important. She was too close for comfort, right? It was like a little too, it was an experience that needed to be had, and she helped me a lot. But there were some inappropriate things that, you know, there was some line crossing that I recognized was not what sponsorship is later. And so I found another sponsor 3 months in. I almost drank. I was like, fuck this, AA is not for me. And you know, I got a new sponsor, and that woman saved my life. I didn't know what a higher power really was. I didn't know what my idea of it was, but I was not interested in spirituality. The only thing that I wanted was to not want to die, because I didn't even know if I didn't want to drink anymore. I couldn't say that I didn't want to drink forever. That was the scariest thing in the whole world to me, to say that I wanted, like, to an idea of a life without alcohol and being happy forever. Even today, sometimes I bristle at that, and I'll have 6 years next week. You know, I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that. But you know, the thing is like, I just wanted to be somebody else. I did not want to be the person that I continued to be and hurt the people that I loved and be a liar. I lied when the truth would have done me better. And I was just walking around and just this person that I didn't recognize and thought that that was who, you know, like God was like, you know, this is it. And I just existed. And my life was excruciating. And so I asked for help and I told everybody. That's not how I was the first time. I didn't put myself in the middle, but I got up in front of everyone. And I was that girl who was like, I don't want to be here. I don't freaking like you guys. And I'm so pissed off that I'm an alcoholic. And this, you know, I even knew about this shit before and still ended up here, you know? And that's the thing is like, I was just so angry that I was here again. But the thing was, is like, these old timers were like, put your head down and do this stuff. And it started out with going to a meeting every day, listening to these people who could share their stories and have this like freedom. I didn't know that's what it was, but like they weren't affected by their things that they did. They didn't have this shame and guilt. They weren't crying and so sad about the things that they had done. Right. And, they were sober and happy to be there and they wanted to help me. And I was like, clean the kitchen. What does that have to do? Like, do you understand? I owe the IRS like $5,000 and like all this stuff is going on. And, you know, people are really mad at me and, that I can't stop drinking. Why do you want me to clean the kitchen? But I did that for every day for a year. And, I started to do these things that started to create self-esteem. I started to be on time. I started to, make my bed in the morning. I started to get on my knees and pray, very simple stuff. And, you know, Robin talked about teaching her to pray. I did not know why I was doing it. And I, you know, it's so crazy because it's the simplest thing, but I started to say, God, help me in the morning. Thank you at night. And I started to work the steps with a sponsor and go through the book. And she explained alcoholism to me. And the main thing was, is like, I have this spiritual malady, which I'm sure a lot of you have heard about. And I was like, what does that mean? I couldn't even read the book. I was so whacked out in the head. I could barely like retain information. So she sat down with me and read the book. And she said, basically you have this soul sickness and you're irritable, restless, and discontent unless you can get some relief. And you will operate like this on your own will for the rest of your life. And you will die doing that because you'll drink again. And I was like, what? Like, you know, I just didn't recognize like that I was up against something so powerful and that I was the one, I was the problem. And so I continued to like, you know, she's like, thankfully there's this solution and we're gonna, you know, don't worry because even in the book, it says that's exactly what this book is about, to have an experience. And that's what we're gonna do. And cause I had all these questions and I wanted to understand right now what it's gonna look like, but she's like, just trust that we're going to go through it and we're going to work these steps. And, that, you know, my 1, 2, and 3, one was also learning that I have, you know, I have a body that can't handle alcohol and a mind that won't leave it alone. And I want to, you know, my main obsession is to try to figure out how to do this life, how I want to do it drinking. And I can't do that. And so I admitted that. I was like, my inner life is a mess and I'm a mess. And, you know, I can't drink successfully. So what's next? Step 2, do you believe that there's something bigger than you that can restore you to sanity? Well, I was willing to believe that. I wasn't sure because I think I'm unique at this point and no one's ever experienced or thought the things that I have. So I'm like, I guess if it worked for you, maybe it'll work for me. And then step 3, it's like, I made a decision. That's the part that I missed because I tried to like manifest this whole thing, like this burning bush experience. And that's not what happened. But I was like, I thought I needed to feel something in step 3 and that I was going to have this profound experience. But really all I did was make a decision to work the rest of the steps and launch off into this work. And I did an inventory and I wrote out all this stuff. And, you know, I went through these steps and like 4 was like, I dropped out of college for a reason. I don't want to write all this stuff down. A lot of this shit is so dramatic and like, I'm really pissed and I don't want to do this. So someone sat with me, and this is what people will do in these rooms, and it's really valuable because I was that girl who couldn't sit by herself for 5 minutes and smoke a cigarette because I was so afraid of my thoughts. And someone sat down with me and wrote, like, helped me answer these questions and write my inventory until I was finished. Like, someone volunteered to do that. and it helped them, right? Like, they're just doing their stuff and they're like, keep writing. And I'm like, okay, you know, I just keep doing my stuff. And then I got to the fifth step, and this is when a huge shift happened. I had never really gotten to a fifth step. And this woman sat in front of me and she told me the truth about myself. And she said some things that nobody was ever willing to say to me. She told me I was a brat and that I was entitled. And then I had a, you know, she told me about my selfishness and my self-righteousness and the way that I looked at the world and how I experienced all this self-pity. And she just started to lay out this stuff that really tripped me up. I was like, you know, like, did you hear what I just said about him? Like, and she was just pointing at me and telling me like, hey girl, look at this. And it was like the biggest part for me was, it was the first time I felt like I experienced real love. And at the end of it, she said, the war is over. You don't ever have to live in your head like that again. And I was like, I just sobbed, you know, she just like, it was like a moment, a shift for me where I was like, oh my God, like there's a solution, because it's, I can't change other people. People aren't out to get me. It's me that needs to change. And so, you know, the next day it talks about in the fifth step promises, looking the world in the eye, like we can really look the world in the eye. And I tested that theory. I'm like looking at people and I'm like, I know some shit you don't, you know, and like really like trying to take this and run with it, right? And so, you know, I filled this new confidence about me, because I'm like, wait, I'm not so confused anymore. I'm not like, why do I keep doing this? Because the thing is about an alcoholic, you back me into a corner far enough, the reality is I don't know why I do the things that I do. I don't know, just as much as you don't, why I continue to drink again, why I get all the way up here and I build this stuff up and then I just bring it down on my head, why I sabotage all of my relationships and all of my life, and why I can't be successful. And so, and why I don't want to live, you know, like, I don't know. And so the thing is like, I start to understand, I start to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I was like, oh my God. And so 6 and 7 have, you know, I've worked the steps quite a few times and they've evolved for me. But 6 and 7, you know, basically, for me now, it's like, I sat and meditated the first time and was like, I have no idea what this is about. But I read 6 and 7 and I've read it multiple times, and I highly suggest it, reading 6 and 7 and the 12 and 12. And I started to recognize, you know, my defects of character. It talks about in the seventh step prayer, taking the good and the bad and starting to get, you know, humbled. There's some things with 6 that I'm like, I'm not humbled about and I really don't want to let go of. They still work for me. There's some things that even now I've done some work and it's like, nope, I circle those things and I'm like, I'm not willing to let go of those. But the ones that I am, you know, I start to pray on those. And one of those is like being two-faced or not being direct, right? Like that's a great example for me. When I get scared, I'm like, oh yeah, I love you. Or, you know, I'm not honest. I participate in stage characters. And so I start to pray about those things. And a big one for me was lying when I got sober. When I was sober working at a restaurant, I just lied to everybody for no reason. That was my first language. And I would tell people stuff that just didn't even matter. And I can still do that. I was talking to Robin today and I lied last week about something very small to this lady I've never met before. And I was like, that's interesting. I used to beat myself up about it, but now I can look at it and just be like, that's interesting. I wonder what's going on. And so with 6 and 7, I recognized that, oh, this is a lifetime process. Like, this is something I'm always going to be talking to my higher power about. And if God can lift the obsession to drink, or, you know, I'm still sober today, maybe God can do those things. And then 8 and 9, you know, when I started to make amends and I started to make that list, I was like, oh my God, it's never ending. You know, I resented almost every person I came in contact with. And I was like, I owe lots of people amends. And, you know, I have some more people I'm making amends to today. Like at 6 years sober, and it's, a powerful experience to, you know, revisit some of those. But you know, that's really where the rubber has hit the road for me. And the first time around was, you know, standing in front of people and saying, I'm wrong. And I recognize that I'm wrong. And I wasn't really sure that I was going to be different. I wanted to be different, but you know, I was so afraid. I was like making these amends and these financial amends. And my biggest fear was like, I don't know, you know, like I've never really been the person that I'm telling you I want to be, but I'm willing. And so, you know, I started to make amends and thought I would be, you know, there's moments where I thought I would go to jail. There's moments where, people are cussing me out. There's people, you know, who didn't want to talk to me but I was willing. And there was a shift in me that I had never experienced before. And, another big thing about my story that I always share is that from 1 to like 9 months, I want to drink and drug every day. I'm thinking about it when I wake up. I'm thinking about it when I go to bed. I'm obsessing about it all the time. And I think that something's wrong with me going to AA and everyone's like 2-3 months sober. And they're like lots of people are saying, the obsession has been lifted. And I was like, F you guys, like, this is not real. I cannot, you know, I'm so pissed and annoyed because I think something's wrong with me. Like, why am I obsessing about this stuff every day? I'm sober. I'm doing this stuff. Like, why is this still on me? And then finally, you know, I'm just doing the things. I'm making amends. And you know, I'm doing stuff. I'm doing my 10 steps. I'm calling people. I'm praying. I'm, you know, just really trying. I'm calling my sponsor all the time. I'm being honest with other people. And then, you know, I'm praying and meditating. I don't like meditating, but I'm still doing it. And then one day at about, I think I was 9 months sober. I'm sitting with my sponsor and I looked up and it was just a moment, where it was like the sun was setting and it was such a weird thing. But to me, it was like one of my first spiritual experiences where I was like, I haven't thought about drinking in 3 days. And it was like one of those powerful moments because I never thought that that could happen for me. And I never thought I could be free of that because I had been living a life where, you know, all I'm doing is seeking relief and satisfaction. That's all I'm doing all the time. And all I ever really wanted was peace and freedom. That's it. And I didn't know what that meant. And even sober, I'm sitting here wanting to claw my eyes out because all I want to do is drink. And all I want to do is do bad shit still. And, you know, and it, there was a time period where, you know, that still felt like me. I felt like an imposter being sober. And I had a lot of painful things that I did out there. And so the healing started. And, you know, I called my sponsor after making some amends. And I was like, girl, I have all these problems still that are coming up. I know I said that the obsession has been lifted and all that stuff, but I have all these issues. And she was like, you know what? I think it's time to start sponsoring and raising your hand to sponsor. And I was like, you know, that mysterious bullshit that I was like, this is not what I called you about. You know, like, what? I want the answer. This is not the answer. And I started raising my hand to sponsor. And, you know, that's a moment too where I was like, I don't have anything to give. And I've always questioned stuff in AA. And everybody's like, yeah, yeah, we've heard about it. They laugh and they say, we love you, you know. And so I'm like, you know, I have my first sponsee and I'm like, oh, Lord, like my ego's super affected. And I'm like, I got to know this stuff. I don't know how to take somebody through the steps. I was like half, you know, completely out of it, still drunk. It felt like when I got sober, like, what do I do? And so, you know, that I started going through the book again with my sponsor and she helped me and I started to take girls through the steps. And then I started to see that all of these painful things that I had done and continued to do, even in sobriety, started to have purpose. And I was like, I started to have this feeling of like, oh, wait a second. That's why a lot of this stuff happened. That's why I did a lot of these things. And the light started to come on with a lot of these girls that was like, you know, for me, just such a gratifying feeling. I'd never felt gratitude in that way before. I felt gratitude for like, you know, like being places on time and like simple stuff, but like this overpowering thing where I was like, wow, I have, you know, I'm useful in a way that I never have been before. And so I'd never felt purpose like that. And so, you know, the main thing for me is like, with women in sobriety now, like Robin was talking about, you know, I've had a hard time over, you know, I've worked the steps and, you know, done a lot of studying of different things in sobriety. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me over time and the biggest delusion that comes is like that I need to have my shit together. I need to be this, put together person for my sponsees, for the women that I know, for you guys. Like, I want you guys to think that I spit fire, that I have this story, that I, you know, that I'm so, well spoken and can articulate all this stuff. And really, like, all the biggest thing for me was my sponsor. Like, she shared with me the shit. She shared with me what was really going on, the things that she was walking through as a woman in sobriety, the pain that she had, the fears that she had. And she was like, I'm working on this right now. And the biggest thing that I've learned in sobriety is that I am able to continue. I've never finished anything in my whole life. I've never continued on something so deeply. And there's been moments where I don't want to do this. There's been a lot of moments where I do not want to do this stuff. It's been, you know, and there's moments too where throughout sobriety, I've baffled myself with the level of selfishness that I can participate in, right? Like, self-will in sobriety is crazy. I've hit a few bottoms in sobriety, and I've surprised myself with the way that, you know, I can act. The moments that I can participate in some of that behavior that I, you know, said I would never do sober. But it's been a delusion for me, the same way that it was out there in sobriety. It says in the book, I can wrest satisfaction. So basically I can just grab, take satisfaction out of life if only I manage well. And I'm a victim to that delusion, and I can fall into that. I can fall asleep to my life the same way that I could out there. But, you know, there's been so many promises that have come true when I'm spiritually fit and like I'm doing this stuff, even when I don't want to. Like I said before, I'm not a slave to my emotions. I don't step on the toes of the people that I love. And I can, you know, be honest and uphold relationships that I never thought I could before. I got to visit my mom for Mother's Day yesterday and today. And, there's a lot of stuff going on in my family, right? There's always a lot of stuff going on with family. But my parents don't freak out and call me a million times anymore trying to figure out where I'm at. I don't show up late. You know, I don't lie to them about my life and what's really going on. Like, I say things even though I don't want to sometimes because I'm afraid of their reaction. You know, I have people, like, I've made amends to my biological father, who I never thought I'd talk to again. And, you know, that's been a rocky relationship. But, like, you know, I show up for people even when I don't want to today. And I, you know, I have a relationship with him. And, you know, I've faced some things and some scary situations in sobriety. You know, I've had relationships that I wasn't so, I guess, at the time proud of, right? Like, I experienced some romantic relationships in sobriety where I had to put a protective order on somebody, where I've had to, do things that I only thought I would have to do when I was drinking, right? And, but the thing is like, I've stayed honest and walked through those things and not had to drink again. And that is not of my doing, right? Like, I never in a million years thought that I could say the things that were going on in my head, tell people what I'm actually doing, right? Like, sometimes how I pop off in traffic, or I say that shit to my boyfriend, or I thought this in my head that's like really messed up. I thought that I would be locked up for stuff like that. That if you guys got to know me and really knew the stuff that was going on, that you would look at me and be like, oh my God, like, you are not worth helping, right? And that you're too crazy for this. Like, we said insane, but you're a little too insane for this. And, you know, that's not what you guys did. You guys are my people and you welcomed me and you're like, oh yeah, girl, me too. You know, I had people that would just say like, yeah, me too. Like, I did this and would just relate to me. And I related to alcoholics in a way that they started to, like, reading this book, I started to understand things about myself, and still to this day, that I had just never, like, was never able to say before. And it was like, people were speaking a language that I didn't really understand, but they were saying things that I just couldn't believe they also thought or felt, right? That's the thing that I related to the most. And there was a love, and still is, that, you know, even though I'm almost 6 years sober, which is huge, this was not my plan. I didn't want to stay sober, right? I didn't want to be this woman who helps other people and has a spiritual life and, like, says this shit. I thought that shit was for the birds and, like, you know, like, that people, you have to be a saint and, like, have to be pure and do all that, you know, like, I thought I had to, like, I don't know, just be rendered white as snow is what it says in the book. Like, just be somebody completely different. And, that's not what you guys taught me. You taught me what integrity is, and that what it is to be true to my spirit, and that it's okay to be me and to continue and to say out loud, oh, I'm growing up in this program with you guys. And, you know, nothing like, and this is something I've learned really big this year. That continues, like, I just have never had, the needed power was never there, right? I wanted to be all these things and live up to this grandiose life that I thought I needed for you guys to like me and love me, and that then I would be enough, right? And once I exhausted all those options and really, like, was like, you know, in my mind, like, messed them up and said, you know, I can't do that. I want to drink instead. I thought it was a choice. I thought my life was over, and I thought, like, I had messed up too much to ever have a different life. And what I find now this year is, like, nothing and no one is beyond hope or saving. People gave me hope, you know, and the first lady that I contacted in AA, I called her, and she used to help me when I was 18. Her name is Hope. And I called her, and she goes, or I texted her on my way back to my first meeting, and she goes, welcome home. And I just couldn't believe she said that to me. And that's what it feels like. Every time I decide to come back and continue to do this work and learn about myself and be real with you guys about where I'm at and who I am and the thoughts that I'm having and saying, yeah, I just lied to that lady last week. Like, I texted my sponsor right after, and I said, I just told this lady a whole story about something that's not even real, and I have no idea why I did it. I'm going to take it into prayer and meditation. And she was like, yay, you know, like, she didn't even, it wasn't even a big deal. But the thing is like, none of us are beyond helping. And even somebody like me that continues to come up with that idea in my head and these delusions, that if I get more time or if I am around these certain people, you know, I have these stage characters where I think I need to be somebody else. It's not real. And I'm, you know, I'm deepening this relationship with a higher power. I don't even know what it is. I call it God because that's what I've known to call it. But AA has never told me who I have to be. AA has never said, you know, you have to believe this and you have to. The main thing is, it just says, if you want to be sober and, like, be free, here's this stuff. And we have some people in here who've already done it who will help you. And I was like, you know, that's something I can get down with still today. And I have a tribe of people, like Robin was talking about, some women that are like, yeah, girl, you know, and I know some girls too that I can call that will co-sign my shit. And so there's some of those people too, but I have some women who are continuously working these steps, and I still study this stuff and still get into the book. Right now I'm studying the 12 and 12. I have a home group, the 8 o'clock Westlake group is my home group. And there's a women's meeting on Saturday morning at Bolden at 11:30 a.m. that's really good, that I go to every week when I can. And you know, the main thing is for me is that I just continue. And I asked God today, I was praying for the willingness to do some stuff that I don't want to do right now. There's some really tough stuff that I need to face in my life, that we all do, and we all come to certain crossroads and stuff like that. But, like, I have some stuff right now I don't want to do. And so I'm like, hey, God, it's me again today. I need some willingness. Can you please help me? You know, and I didn't know I could talk to God like that before. I didn't know I could tell the truth. I didn't know I could do a lot of these things. And, you know, tell people I'm wrong, or, you know, all these things that were super easy after the fact. Now that I look at it, I'm like, whoa, that was so simple. It's not easy. It's simple. And so, you know, the solution has been so simple for so long. And if I just, you know, pray for the willingness and pick up these tools, my life changes in a way that doesn't even equal, like it doesn't even add up to the small things that I do. Like a very small piece of effort goes such a long way in this program. And the last thing I want to share with you guys before I be quiet is this right here at the, it's on page 552. And it's in one of the stories. I would read the stories in the back of the book when I couldn't go to a meeting or whatever. And this says at the bottom of the page, this great experience that released me from the bondage of hatred and replaced it with love is really just another affirmation of the truth I know. I get everything I need in Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything I need, I get. And when I get what I need, I invariably find that it was just what I wanted all the time. So for me, it's like, I think I know what I want, and God shows me what I need, and then I find out that that's really what I wanted, and I get to be who I am, and my spirit is safe, and I'm safe today, and this is one day at a time. And so I'm so glad to be with you guys. Happy Mother's Day to all you lovely ladies with babies. I see all of you, and thank you, gentlemen, too, and just thank you for letting me be here. I love all of you. Thanks for my sobriety.
Thank you, Jordan, for speaking. You were awesome.
Yes, great job, Jordan. Thank you.
Hi, Sam. Hi.